This is Squawk Pod. I'm CNBC producer Katie Kramer. Today on our podcast, Memorial Day weekend is just about here. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy has opened up the state's beaches just in time, but with caution.
I want to open up as much as anybody. Trust me. Want to get folks back to work as fast as possible. But if we screw up the public health piece, none of that will happen.
And Coca-Cola CEO James Quincey on the spending of the global consumer.
The economic impact of the lockdown is just starting to begin. And we do see a protracted adjustment coming along.
It's Thursday, May 21st, 2020. Squawk Pod begins right now.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to Squawk Box here on CNBC. I'm Becky Quick, along with Joe Kernan and Andrew Ross Sorkin.
Memorial Day weekend has just about arrived, and Americans are ready to assume some sense of summer normalcy, including heading to the beach. New Jersey has slowly been greenlighting parks and non-essential businesses as part of its reopening plan. And now, just in time for the unofficial start of summer, the Jersey Shore is back as well. New Jersey is one of the states hardest hit by the coronavirus pandemic, with the death toll now over 10,000. And that hits close to home for many of the Squawk Box team. As you'll hear, Joe and Becky both live in the Garden State. And as you might know, CNBC headquarters and many of our colleagues are based there. New Jersey Governor Phil Murphy joined Squawk Box this morning to share some of his reopening strategy. Here's Joe.
Governor, welcome. You getting any sleep?
I am, Joe. Good to be back with you.
It's good to see you also. Bring us up to date, up to speed on what stage we're in right now and whether we're the Garden State where I live as well. Is it really the right time in terms of all the statistics? Are we within all the guidelines in terms of?
Yeah,
we are. OK, go ahead, Governor.
Joe, I think we are. But this is a delicate balance without question. First of all, we've lost over 10,700 blessed lives, which is almost unfathomable. It is unfathomable. Having said that, hospitalizations, new hospitalizations, ICU beds, ventilator use, all the things that we track have been going in the right direction now for more than a couple of weeks. And so we've begun to take what I would call baby steps. Admittedly, beaches is a big step in that list. But we've had a bias toward opening things up first that are outdoors and loosening that. So, for instance, parks, county and state parks, we did a few weekends ago. Beaches, as I mentioned, curbside pickup earlier this week for non-essential retail. We've opened up construction more. Again, a bias toward the outside because that's where the virus can do less damage. But this weekend's a big one with beaches.
Governor, have you ever seen anything like this? And I know what kind of world we're living in right now. This is the Post today. I mean, a major news. I don't know. Is the Post a major newspaper? It needs to end now. And I could look at the Daily News and I could find a cover that says, are you out of your minds to even consider stepping out of your house? So and you look at the polls and it's like so weird. It's like 90% of Republicans say one thing and 90% of Democrats say the opposite. How do you walk the line? You've got an economy in New Jersey that you want to, you know, you want people to go back to work, but we don't want anyone to die. It's so weird to watch, yeah. Governor.
Listen, I'm not, I'm in violent agreement. This is something unlike we've ever seen before. We do have a pretty clear-eyed focus on a couple of different guiding principles. First of all, data. We're as moneyball as we can be, and we say all the time that data determines dates, and then more broadly, public health creates economic health. So we chose to rip the Band-Aid off the economy, which has been extraordinarily painful for job loss, for small businesses, for many of our sectors. But the alternative was to let the virus go, or in this case, open up too early, in which case I think it's throwing gasoline on the fire, not just on the public health piece of this, but you also have a much deeper hole, ultimately, economically. So as much as I want to open up as much as anybody, but trust me, I want to get folks back to work as fast as possible, get small businesses back up on their feet. But if we screw up the public health piece, none of that will happen. And that's really the side that we need to err on.
There's so many different conflicting winds on how to go. We want herd immunity. We initially wanted to make sure we had enough ventilators and that the healthcare system wasn't overrun, but it was never stipulated right at the beginning that no one would ever catch the virus again, because that's impossible. And it wasn't that we were going to stay inside till we absolutely get a vaccine that works. So what changed? What are we trying to do, Governor? I mean, that's why people want to, the vulnerable population, you want to try to sequester those people. And maybe the people that are going to get through it okay are able to go back to work. Are you thinking about, you must be thinking about that all the time, how to do that.
All the time, Joe. And one of the big pieces that's important to note is we need the right infrastructure in place, not just for us to be confident, but more importantly, for the 9 million New Jerseyans to be confident that they could begin to dip their toe back in the water. And big pieces of that are, number one, we've ramped up testing. That's a dramatically different reality than even the last time I was on with you. We're now going to be able to, by the end of next week, we'll be doing over 20,000 tests a day in the state. Secondly, contact tracing between an amped up body of folks who are getting on the phone and speaking to people along with technology. Those are two realities that we have in the state today that no state had when this whole thing started. That's intended to give folks the confidence that, you know what, if we see a flare up, we could spot it quickly. We've got a plan in place to isolate that. And so that gives folks the confidence they can get back out there on the boardwalk, get to the park, do other things that I hope will be able to open up over the next several weeks.
Becky.
Governor, that was kind of my question, too. You answered part of it. But we've been speaking with Scott Gottlieb every day, the head of the former head of the FDA. His concern,
I love him, Jersey guy, by the way.
And his concern is that things are going to die down in July and August. That's the good news. But his concern is it will come back in the fall, kind of like H1N1 has in the past. Yep. He's concerned that we won't be ready for that we won't track it quickly enough. How do we do that? Where are all these testing places going to be? His concern was that it wouldn't be done in doctor's offices. There would be simply coronavirus testing places that you had to go to, and he doesn't think that's enough. And the contact tracing that you mentioned, I live in New Jersey, too, and I don't know anything about that yet.
By the way, you got a lot of Jersey blood on the show, which is another reason I love coming on this. Scott's a rock star, and he's a guy we look to and speak to, and you hear that from him, and you hear it from other experts that this thing could come back in the fall with a vengeance, which is why on our sort of six-stop road to recovery, the sixth point is resiliency, and by that we mean really two things. One is this virus has torn open in full public view awful inequities, particularly along racial lines in our society. And secondly, to your question, Becky, it's resiliency in making sure we've got the bed capacity, ventilator capacity, PPE, healthcare, bullpen help, the medicines, et cetera, that we didn't have either as a nation or certainly in our state when this started, that we've got that in our stockpile, if you will, in anticipation of, God willing, I hope it doesn't happen, but if we get that second wave, and that's another area that we're focused laser-like on right now.
I mean, great news to have a lot of the things prepared that we didn't in the past, hospital beds, PPE. But, I mean, I'm thinking of this as a parent, and if I send my kids back to school in the fall, I want to know immediately if there's an outbreak somewhere so that I know how to protect my family, particularly if I have any vulnerable members of my family. How can you make sure we know that quickly and immediately?
Yeah, well, testing is a big part of that, and we've scaled it up and we'll continue to scale it up. Just a couple of examples to Scott's point, Rite Aid, we just announced a couple of days ago, is going to have 50 locations testing by the end of next week. Walmart's going to have 7 of their big superstores doing drive-through testing by tomorrow. So every day, it seems, we announce a new expansion of this. And that's going to have to include, listen, we've established a group of wise women and men to advise us. And the three big tough nuts that we've got to give people confidence on sooner than later are daycare, schools, public transportation. And you just said something, as a mom, I'm a dad. I mean, you've got to have confidence that you've got the testing, the quick, rapid turnaround ability to track that down, the contact tracing. You've got a plan in place to isolate any hotspots should they come up. And people have to believe that. And that's what we're focused on.
Governor, can you speak a little bit about the conversations you've had with the teachers unions in your state and what you anticipate doing with teachers that either have pre-existing conditions, comorbidities, or are of an age? And by the way, some of the most legendary, greatest teachers in your state and around this country happen to have been in the business for a long time. So they're older. And for them to actually go to school and to work creates certain challenges, as you know.
Yeah, I don't have a crisp, easy to speak answer on this. That's probably the most complicated part about back to school. So we've been virtual. We'll continue that through the end of this school year. We're trying to find a way. I hope we'll have some news on this by tomorrow to allow folks to celebrate responsibly their graduation. We talk about several lives every day in our press conference of people we've lost. Invariably, Joe, there's a teacher in there. And it's somebody, as you suggest, who was at it for like 50 or 60 years. The unions have been fabulous. We have the number one public education system in America, and we want to keep it that way. But we've got to find a way, I think, responsibly, not just for the moms and dads, as to Becky's point, that you could have kids back together in some responsible social distancing way, but that you're protecting the cross-generational aspect of this virus. I don't have a crisp answer for you, but I suspect it's a lot of social distancing, probably a decent dose of virtual learning, and a whole lot of testing on a regular basis going on. I would bet those are the ingredients.
Governor, be nice if some small businesses were deemed essential, I guess. That's a problem. And I'm not necessarily just talking about hair salons, but can you give me any idea when I'm going to be able to maybe do that? Or what about an indoor restaurant with some separation and some masks with all the staff?
Yep.
What's the date for those types of things?
I don't have a date, but I would hope it is a matter of weeks. If we keep seeing the curves and the progress that we've seen, and we got to make sure that's the most important piece of this. We've already started this now for several weeks. We've done this sort of in iterative steps. Outside's easier than inside, so the toughest nuts to crack are inside, no ventilation, sedentary. And so that means indoor dining is going to be more complicated than outdoor dining. The barbershop, which all of us need, the salon, the gym, those are complicated. I am hopeful that with the progress we've been making, that's a matter of weeks. We do have non-essential retail allowing curbside pickup as of this past Monday. I hope we'll continue to see progress on that front. And as I say, I would point you to a matter of weeks. Hopefully we get some of that stuff open.
So one thing, I feel like I was just at the gym stretching to do this horrific thing that I have to do. So I'm not that, leave those closed. No, I need to go back. That's not true. We do need to get those open, too. And all those people need paychecks, too, Governor. A lot of people I care about that need that. Anyway, as I said, get some sleep. Hopefully this is just for you and for people that have the weight of these decisions on their shoulders. I can't even imagine. But appreciate you coming on the show today, Governor.
Thank you, Joe. Thank you, Becky. Good to be with you. And happy Memorial Day to everybody.
Okay. You too.
Next on Squawk Pod, Coca-Cola Chairman and CEO James Quincy.
We're going to have to recognize that coming after this virus crisis will be the economic impact and hangover of the lockdown. And there'll be a much greater focus by consumers on affordability and getting the price points lower.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to Squawk Pod. At the start of 2020, when we were just learning about the coronavirus, Coca-Cola popped to an all-time high, trading around $60 a share. But as businesses came to a halt and consumers were told to stay home in March, the stock plunged 25% in April. Since then, shares have rebounded a bit, 16%. Roughly half of the company's revenue comes from away-from-home channels like restaurants, movie theaters, and stadiums. In China, which began easing stay-at-home orders in April, demand for Coke beverages in May has not yet recovered to pre-crisis levels. For more on Coke and the global consumer, here's Andrew Ross Sorkin with Coca-Cola CEO James Quincy.
James, it's great to see you this morning. Want to start with this. About a month ago, when you were reporting, you were talking about volumes being down about 25%. That was about 30 days ago. How does it look right now?
We're still seeing in May globally negative volumes. They are a little bit better than they were in April, principally driven by the degree of lockdown. There are some markets where the lockdown is being eased. It's not fully open, but it's not as locked down as it was. And so we're seeing some improvements in countries where the lockdowns are coming up, but still quite negative versus prior year. Very early days in the reopening phase.
To the degree that your experience in China may offer us a little bit of a path forward, what are you seeing there, not just in terms of the supply chain, and we'll get to that in a moment, but in terms of the way the consumer is behaving? But again, I imagine it goes to some of the social distancing and other requirements that are in place there.
Yeah, a couple of effects in China. I mean, clearly things have improved in China from a demand point of view. Where there is social distancing, of course, it is meaning that sales in those channels are not back to the sorts of levels they were pre-crisis, pre the virus. I think the other thing that we're still trying to gauge in places like China and globally is you've got a big inventory effect, which wouldn't be normally something to really worry about at a global level. But when the lockdowns occur, shop retailers stop buying and still keep selling to some degree. So when the reopening starts, there's a restocking phase. So we are certainly being cautious where sales are looking like they're improving as to try and understand how much is the consumer and how much is restocking. And I think for manufacturers like us, we're going to need to see some more months, at least some more weeks go by before we can really gauge what the consumer is doing. But it certainly looks like in a place like China, where frankly, in February, we were down 90%, that we're coming back in May, even though not to pre-crisis levels yet.
What percentage of the business is grocery versus restaurants versus events, stadiums, and the like? How would you break that down?
Yeah, for Coca-Cola globally, the simplest way to look at it is about half of our business is all the collection of at home, where you buy and you consume at home, and half of our business is away from home. Principally restaurants, cafes, on-the-go outlets, and stadiums are a smaller piece of that, but there is a whole series of channels that add up to away from home. But in total, it's about half of our business, and that's the bit that's been most impacted by the lockdown. So the effect of the lockdowns is very concentrated on the away-from-home channels. There's some improvement in at-home and the e-commerce that goes with at-home, but not nearly enough, as we pointed out in our April update, not enough to compensate for the away-from-home sales that we're losing.
James, historically, Coca-Cola has been one of the largest global advertisers in the world. And that, of course, has a trickle down effect when, in fact, you stop advertising or you slow advertising. Speak to that in terms of how you're thinking about marketing, what that marketing spend looks like, and maybe what kind of channels you plan to use in the future and if that shifts.
Yeah, in the very short term of the second quarter, we made a decision that a lot of that money was going to be ineffectively spent. And frankly, some of that resource it needed to be redirected at helping in all the community actions. We spent well over $100 million in community support actions around the world. So we wanted to have less advertising, one, because we didn't think it would work from a financial point of view, and two, just as importantly, we thought it would be tone deaf in the heart of the crisis. So we came down very drastically in the second quarter. As we look to the second half and into 2021, clearly we're going to start to do more marketing activities. We'll see some channel shifts. Clearly what we're going to also be focusing on that is, you know, where does reactivation need to occur? We're going to be spending marketing dollars to help bring the away from home channels back up. We're going to have to recognize that coming after this virus crisis will be the economic impact and hangover of the lockdown. And there'll be a much greater focus by consumers on affordability and getting the price points lower. So our marketing will shift both in terms of where we advertise and what we're trying to support, the behavior we're trying to support, and understanding that there's going to be a different consumer out-of-pocket money reality for some period of time.
And the other question I was going to ask is, you have prioritized what you call your core brands during this period. What happens to all of the other brands that you were trying to build? I've become an addict of the AHA that's how you pronounce it, right? AHA sparkling water. But I imagine that was a new brand for you. So it's probably not going to be getting the same kind of marketing attention, nor the same kind of shelf space that it might have in your plans just 3 or 4 months ago.
Good news for you is that AHA will be. We're very pleased with how that's gone, even in the crisis. The simple reality in the short term is for the retailers in the middle of the lockdown, they needed to focus on less SKUs to keep the supply chain running. With all the complications of running their operations around the world from big stores to small stores, they needed fewer SKUs. And that naturally leads all the manufacturers to pull back on the innovation. You can't really engage with the consumers to tell them about it, and it clogs up the supply chain. So we, I think many others, focused in on the core brands and the core package sizes to make the supply chain run around the world and for the retailers. And that was really important thing to do in the lockdown, to make sure we didn't run out of food and beverages around the world. As we look forward, clearly we'll be bringing back the innovation. It's going to be tougher. There's going to be a kind of recessionary environment. So we have gone and we are going through a process of prioritizing which of the innovations did we really think were starting to work at the beginning of this year and continue to back them in the rest of the year, AHA being one of them. Which are the ones that, you know, for prioritization, we're not going to do in the second half of this year. Maybe we'll keep them to next year. And there'll be some where we'll decide the mood and the way the world is going in the next 12 months, that innovation is no longer the right thing. I mean, it seems a very long time ago, January, sitting here today, and the mood has changed. And so some of those innovations need to be parked and kept in the drawer for another year.
Going back to stadiums to some degree, but I'm thinking more broadly in terms of sports, you have sponsored lots of different sports leagues, including the NBA and Olympics and so many other things. What kind of conversations are you having with the leagues, with the television networks, either about pulling money back, pushing them to go forward and press ahead with or without people in the audience? Does that make those sponsorships to you less valuable? How are you guys, how are you managing through that?
Absolutely tricky, very tricky. I mean, clearly there's a couple of effects here. We have these sponsorships with multiple sports events, stadiums. Actually, there's a whole series of things, concerts, et cetera, which are not going to be able to go ahead, at least in the way that they were envisaged a few months ago. And we're going to have the conversations. We are having the conversations with them about, you know, how are they thinking about going ahead? How are they applying the necessary government and medical guidelines? What are they imagining they're going to do in terms of whether they're going to have the events, not have the events, have them in a different way, and what that means to the sponsors? And of course, we, like many other sponsors, will be there going, okay, so what's the new deal? How can we manage through this together? I'm sure in the long term, many of these will be still fantastic properties, and there's a lot of things we can do together in partnership. But we do have to cross the bridge to get there, and in some cases that'll mean renegotiations. It's a new reality. Everything's been shaken up, and we have to prioritize the money we spend where it'll be effective. So I think there will be changes coming in the coming months as we work through these problems.
Separately, your headquarters is in the great state of Georgia. Georgia has moved to reopen, was one of the first to reopen. Can you just speak to your own personal experience on the ground?
Yeah, sure. I mean, Georgia has loosened up some of parts of the lockdown, not the whole thing. And of course, like many other states and actually many other parts of the world, the local cities also have a role to play and their own sets of rules. We, in our large complex in Atlanta, are still prioritizing that the people that go to the complex are those whose jobs most depend on being there, lab technicians, other sorts of jobs which are really very dependent on being the location, and keeping everyone else working remotely, as many as we can. And we certainly see that running through the summer. At the end of the day, even those places where lockdown is being eased, they're still asking to maintain social distancing. And the best way that we can achieve that for the safety of our employees and everyone else who comes to the complex is to prioritize those people who most need to be there and to ask the rest to maximize the amount of time they're still working from home. So we still see a very extended period of time with this duality and a low occupancy in our offices so that we can promote physical distancing. And I think that reality is going to carry forward for some period of time, even as the kind of the hard lockdowns ease. And we see that around the world. We only have a very few offices almost as open as they were prior to the crisis. Most of them are in this phase of low occupancy so that we can prioritize those that most need to be there.
Hey, James, real quick, do you see a given what you're saying, which seems to be a longer timeline than a lot of people are thinking about, do you see a disconnect between the markets, if you will, and the real economy in terms of where you see the world 12 months from now?
We're very focused. We looked at every crisis that we've been in for 134 years, and we know we've emerged stronger from every single one ahead of GDP recovery. But I'm very much of the view that this is going to be a U, or more of an extended U recovery than a V recovery. And where the markets may be anticipating some time ahead, but on the ground in the economy, there are a lot of people who are on unemployment or on furloughs on the European schemes. The economic impact of the lockdown is just starting to begin. And we do see a protracted adjustment coming along. We will emerge strong from that. We always have. But that's what we see ahead.
James, I want to say thank you for joining us this morning. We appreciate all your insights and your perspective. We wish you and all your employees a lot of luck. Again, we appreciate you being with us, James, and look forward to having you back on Squawk very soon. Good luck.
Thank you.
Next on Squawk Pod, how we're coping staying at home. Back after this. You're listening to Squawk Pod. Here's Joe Kernan.
So I'm trying to figure out, it's confusing. Is time going quickly or was March a long time ago? Because time is going really quickly, but early March was a long time ago.
So it's both. It's that Groundhog's Day cycle. It's the same day every single day. I can't even check the days off. You know, I measured how long it was because my hair was so long yesterday. I had to chop it. It was something like 14 weeks since I'd gotten it cut. I couldn't do it.
I saw you were cutting your hair. You did a good job.
Thank you.
I didn't know for you it would be such a priority because it does just seems like you can just grow it and it gets longer and it doesn't really matter.
Oh, my gosh. It was so heavy. You watch me on the spy cam. Most of what I do in the commercial breaks is try to get my hair out of my face. I can't take it.
Yeah, but for you know what? You know what's happening to me? The Twitter trolls.
Your hair got cut.
No, the Twitter trolls are back on the it's a toupee again. So, you know, that was gone for a while when it was.
You were wearing your shaggy toupee?
They're not that smart because I'd have to have, number one, who would pay good money for this? And number two, I got 10 different ones and it slowly gets longer and longer and longer. And then it goes back, you know, for a while it was the dye. Oh, you're dying. But now it's back to Sorkin. You got no problem. You got, you know, shirts get clean. Your hair gets cut.
Own hair.
You got big screens behind you.
I trim it all the time.
Great lighting.
You did that yourself?
Are you really cutting it?
All by myself. I'm really cutting it all by myself. I'll do a YouTube
impressive.
or a Instagram something and show you. I've gotten it down.
I thought you had a friend bubble stylist on retainer up in Connecticut with you.
Nope.
That's what I thought. That's
bought scissors off
nannies,
of Amazon.
The double nannies, the chef,
scissors on Amazon, too.
All right. You know, we don't want to focus on
this. This is all being done personally.
So is it?
And there's no nothing here.
Oh, that's what
we're cooking.
Are you cooking?
We're cooking, every single
stuff?
Night.
You're cooking
every
your,
single
not
night.
Not we, are you.
Pilar is cooking every
you.
Single night. I am helping. I've actually, a little bit, not as much as I probably should. But I've become great at, I'm like Mr. Dishes, I'm Mr. Vacuum, I'm Mr. Ironing, I'm Mr. Laundry. Those are my new and better skills.
What, assigning those duties fairly? Is that what you're doing?
Nope. Nope. And we are producing, by the way, and we've done this story, but we were talking about it in our house because we just had to pay up extra. We are producing so much garbage now because everything's coming into the, you know, you're eating everything in the house
yeah.
that
yeah.
actually our garbage folks send us a note saying that we needed to get an extra, garbage thing.
Garbage bin.
And we have to pay extra because apparently our garbage guy is spending too much time on it.
I think the waste management guy that we had on said that they see that, not commercial, but they're seeing it with the residential people. Are you?
Yeah.
Yep. I can't believe we're still talking.
Jim Fish told us he was raising rates because of that.
One more thing.
And we're paying more.
Is trying to figure out a meal gotten to the point where they're like, not again. It's like, when did we run out of things to suddenly it's like burgers, chicken, can have a maybe get a steak occasionally. And then it's like, then I'm back to where are we? And it's like, we just had this. Why did we run out of food? Because we have no takeout now or something? Or
yes, because we're doing it all ourselves. It's crazy. Taco nights. I'm trying to vary it up every once in a while, but it's hard.
It is. Andrew?
So I'm going to put a plug in for a local business, which a local business in New York City that actually has changed everything we're doing. So Eataly, is the sort of supermarket in New York City. They're now sending, and they'll send you boxes anywhere you want, and they won't tell you what's in it. You pay. It's not cheap, but they just send you groceries, and it's random. And we've been making all sorts of different dinners every night because you do what's in the box, and
that's
been great.
Cool. And they think
and we just started doing
you.
That a couple weeks
but
ago,
you don't
and
know
we've been
advance?
Having a ball doing it. Get to pick what's in the box.
I guess it's Italian food, so everybody likes it. But it's Italian food, so everybody likes it.
Everybody likes it. We never go wrong. I think we're 3 weeks in, and every week we've been it's like Christmas when we get the box. We open it up, and it's very exciting.
Well, now I'm thinking. I was thinking today I might get one of those hams. You know what I mean? One of those honey baked hams that people get for holidays.
Spiral ham.
And I'm thinking I'm going to get pushback.
Yeah. No, I did one for Easter.
I'm going to get pushback.
I did it for Easter. It was really good.
It's not a holiday. So you're ruining it. You can't get it if it's not hot. But they last, you get the slices. You can have sandwiches.
The other thing is pork tenderloin. Yeah, pork tenderloin and beef tenderloin. I've been doing some of those recipes and things.
We're all good. Once again, at least
turkey
we can buy.
Noodles.
At least
turkey
we can buy.
Noodles.
At least we can buy the food that we're talking about. And once again, our 1% of problems probably don't sound
100%
very good to people that are really struggling a lot more than we are. So I'll keep that in mind.
Yep.
That's the show for today. Thank you for listening. Squawk Box is hosted by Joe Kernan, Becky Quick, and Andrew Ross Sorkin. Tune in weekday mornings on CNBC at 6 a.m. Eastern. And subscribe to Squawk Pod. Share it with friends and tweet us at Squawk CNBC. We'll meet you back here tomorrow.